in our lives. In that position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. Please repeat after me. In that position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge, and renunciation, in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. For four questions, Prabhupada. As the contamination of the germs of a particular disease can influence a weaker person, similarly the influence of material nature or illusory energy can act on the weaker or conditioned soul, but not on the liberated soul. Self-realization is a position of the liberated state. One understands his constitutional position by knowledge and by bhakti, renunciation. Without knowledge, one cannot have realization. The realization that one is the infinitesimal part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit makes him unattached to material, conditional life. That is the beginning of devotional service. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, one cannot engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. In this verse, therefore, it is stated, Jnana Mahayagya Yuktena. When one is in the full knowledge of one's constitutional position and is in the renounced order of life, detached from material attraction, then by pure devotional service, Bhakti Yuktena, he can engage himself as a loving servant of the Lord. Paripashyati means that he can see everything in its right perspective. Then the influence of material nature becomes almost nil. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Rama Bhuta Prasanatma. When one is self-realized, he becomes happy and free from the influence of material nature. At that time, he is freed from lamentation and hankering. The Lord states that position as Mad Bhaktin Labhate Param, the real state of beginning devotional service. Similarly, it is confirmed in the Narada Pancharatra that when the senses are purified, they can be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. One who is attached to material contamination cannot be a devotee.
Service. So actually Sankhya Yoga is
Bhakti Yoga, because we see in the beginning chapters of the Gita, Krishna is explaining Sankhya Yoga, which is the beginning of the Bhakti Yoga. So here, Kapila says that position of self-realization is attained via the practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service. So what kind of knowledge is that? Is it what you learn at IIT or at local colleges? No. Jiva Goswami says that the knowledge to be able to perform Bhakti Yoga must be based upon Vedanta. Otherwise, it is just sentimentality. And sentimentality, Srila Prabhupada very succinctly stated, that religion without philosophy is sentiment. Sentimentality, which leads to fanaticism. And the philosophy without religion is speculation. So both are equally bad. So, bhakti is not bhakti unless it is based upon anything. Even Krishna, in the later chapters of the Gita, he tells Arjuna that this knowledge which I'm giving you is based upon the Brahma Sutras, which is Vedanta. He saw Krishna, even though he is, of course, Krishna is, he says, Vedaisya Sarva Mahama Vedyo, Vedanta Krid, Veda Vid, Vedacha. And all the Vedas am I to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna is basically, he's calling on himself as an authority, because it is based upon the Vedanta, but he is also the author of the Vedanta. He is the author of everything. There is nothing without him. Samadhyā yasya yatah, that he is the source of everything, the second sutra of the Vedanta. And the third sutra of the Vedanta is Shastra Yonidvar. Everything is born from Shastra. You cannot make anything up. We have to understand the reality through Shastra. Not through sentiment, not through speculation. If we do these, if we go on these two other paths, then we will be continuing in a circle. It's called samsara. Birth after birth after birth. So the knowledge must be based upon Shastra. If it's not, Bhakti Yoga is not based on Shastra, then what does Rupa Goswami say? Shruti Smriti Puranadi Anusaratra Vinindina Kantati Harer Vata Upatyaya Kapati. That devotional service, which is not based upon the Shrutis, which is not based upon the Smritis, the Pancharatra, the Itihasas, then it is simply a disturbance in society. It can be an obvious disturbance, or it can be a subtle disturbance in the sense that you will not achieve the stated goal of bhakti, which is to go back home, back to God. Bhakti is not much good if you stay in the material world. Material world meaning material consciousness. If we do not ever get rid of our anarthas because we got misdirected, as is the unfortunate situation in Kali Yuga, that even if a person is trying for spiritual life, they get misdirected because they are manda, manda samadhi. So that's important. We have to be careful in what is our source of knowledge, the pramana, and we have to stick to it. We don't speculate, we don't go in other directions. Because of the influence of external society, we have to choose. Are we going to be influenced by the external culture, or are we going to influence that culture? That's the only option. Either we become influenced, or we influence them. There's not a middle ground. There's no middle side. Either in Maya or not in Maya. There's no middle area. So this, and he specifies knowledge and renunciation in devotional service. It's not just, other people are doing, cultivating knowledge. Prabhu Bhattacharya wanted to instruct Lord Chaitanya in knowledge, in Vedanta, also of Vedanta. But it was the Sarvika Bhasha of of Shankaracharya, as Bhaktisiddhanta called it, the poison of the East. He described it as the poison of the East. It is the poison of the soul. It will keep us continuously entrapped in Maya, because it is the last snail of Maya to think that we are God. This is the ultimate illusion. So it has to be according to the devotional principles. And also renunciation. So as the Amrita was speaking yesterday, renunciation means those practices which cultivate sattva-guna. As Krishna explains in the Gita, he describes happiness in the different modes of nature. In sattva-guna, it is just like poison in the beginning, but it is like nectar in the end. Nobody likes to get up early in the morning. Who wants to take a cold bath? Let me sleep a little later and a warm bath. But no, early in the morning with cold bath. This will, it not only cleans the body of the dirt, but also has very powerful effect on the subtle body, the mind, as explained in the Pancharaka Pradipika. It explains what is the effect of cold baths. You may be clean by taking a hot bath, but you cannot go onto the altar unless you're taking a cold bath. And as Prabhu was explaining, that following the principle, this also includes, he didn't mention, but pure food. We must always take pure food. As Ramanujacharya explained in his commentary of the first sutra of the Sri Bhashya, that remembrance is dependent upon pure food. And upasana is dependent upon memory. Because upasana, bhakti yoga, is what? It is the continual remembrance of Krishna. Vishnu smarana. So that is dependent upon pure food, shuddha bhojana. And shuddha bhojana is what? It is the yajna shishta. It is the food remnants of the sacrifice. In other words, when Bhubaneswar cooks, after Krishna eats, that's yajna shishta. That is the real purity. So that is, this type of things are required in renunciation. We have to renounce what is offered in the stalls. And we sometimes see devotees, they'll eat anything after. Sometimes, I've seen in different places, devotees who are quote devotees, they are not so concerned about who prepared the food. They're not very concerned. So therefore we wonder why they have trouble. Or they watch television. No, I don't know any serious devotee who watches television. If they watch television, they become serious devotees in the past tense. They used to be serious devotees because they become associated with a satsang. The television program would not be very interesting unless there was some criminals and some violence, drugs, prostitution. All these wouldn't become very interesting unless these type of elements were on the television. What the Muslims could not do to India in 800 years, what the British couldn't do in 200 years, the Americans have done to India in only 10 years or 20 years. Why? And nobody kept a Muslim in their house. Nobody kept a Britisher in their house. But everybody keeps children in their house, which means they are keeping Americans, the worst, not even good Americans. Many Americans don't even, they also don't like what's on television. The ones who are pious, they think it's terrible. So this is asatsanga. And Shivananda Sen asked Lord Chaitanya, what is the definition of the Vaishnava? It's asatsanga kyagi. He gives up the association of such persons. So these are the type of renunciation which leads to the mode of goodness. There's all other types of renunciation mentioned in Gita which are not in the mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. So this will not lead to the desired goal. And by doing so, one sees everything in the right perspective. So what is that perspective? He sees reality. There's only one perspective. There's reality and then there's illusion. There's not any other perspective. When we see the right perspective, we're seeing the reality. And what is that reality? Krishna explains in the 13th chapter of the Gita. What are the lakshanas of someone who has attained wisdom? So one of those lakshanas is that he sees janma mrityu jaha vyadi dosha dukha nidarshana. He understands the intrinsic evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. And that is what this world is about. This material world is perfectly imperfect. As my godmother's Kutadanya Prabhu nicely quote stated, that it is perfectly imperfect. It is sometimes atheists. I remember when I was a child, there was one atheist television commentator. He was saying, how could there be a God? If there was a God, how could he allow there to be earthquakes, floods, starvation? How could he allow war? How could he allow Holocaust? And in the second world is the Holocaust. And this is, the material world is designed this way, on purpose. It's not a mistake. It's not that there's an absence of manager. Like Chanakya Pandit, he jokingly said that because of lack of advisor, lack of a Mahamantri, Lord Brahma made several mistakes. He said, he made sandalwood tree with no flowers. Gold, which has no smell, nice smell. So these are indications that Lord Brahma was not properly advised. Joking, because he's going to be promoting that the position of the Rajaniti, the king must need so many advisors, otherwise he cannot go one by one wheel alone, the car will not move. He has to have many wheels. So he's saying like this, that the king must have advisors. And just see, because Brahma didn't have an advisor, he made all these mistakes. And even the gopis were complaining that Lord Brahma made eyelids. This is a Christian because of this. So everybody is complaining about him. So, but the material world is not, all these imperfections, much worse imperfections, are not mistakes. Does not show the absence of management. No, it's because there is management, it's managed, it's designed to be this way. One time I was at the Palace of Gold in New Vrindavan. This is the real Vrindavan, and there's the new Vrindavan. So, at different times, I would meet the kind of persons that Srila Prabhupada would mention in his books. I remember the first time I met a real Mayavadi who thought he was God. Wow, it's exactly like Prabhupada said. So I met this one person. She was a Jewish lady, and she was complaining that there's no God. She exactly said, because if there was a God, how could he allow the Holocaust to take place? Now, anybody doesn't know? The Holocaust was the mass executions of millions of Jews during the Second World War. So she's saying that if there was a God, how he could allow this? So I immediately said, without thinking, if your father beats you, is this proof that you don't have a father? Is it? No, it's because you have a father you're being beaten, not because you don't have a father. So it's because there is a God that this material world is this way, because he wants us to leave this world. You know, they have so many jails in India. Do they put, you know, jacuzzi in every jail? You go into the jail and every prisoner has got six apsaras to massage you. It's like when Bharat's army came to the ashram of Bharadwaj Muni. So he's living under a tree. He immediately manifested all kinds of apsaras and gandharvas, and each soldier had six apsaras massaging his body. So much food was manifested. So in the jails of India or any place in the world, they don't have these kind of things. Why? Because they're not meant to be some resort. They're meant to be a place of punishment and reformation so that the person doesn't do this again. So that's why this material world is perfectly imperfect. It is designed such that when we leave it, then Krishna's promise is that when we go to the spiritual world, we will never come back again. Why? We won't want to come back again. It will be such a horrible experience. Manu explains in Manu Smriti that when the Brahmana cultivates Sattva Guna and perfectly understands Brahman,
one of the symptoms, one of the things which will happen, is that he will remember all of his past lives. All of his past lives as a worm in stool, as a tapeworm in somebody's intestine, as a dog, as a king. And on such remembrance, he will become so disgusted. That would be a horrible. That's why we don't remember. We don't remember these things because it would be too horrible. But a person, when they have cultivated such knowledge, they'll be able to cope with such knowledge. Because the mind blocks all of these things out. I have personal experience. I saw one devotee. I'll make a long story short. He fell off the roof of the Hyderabad temple shortly after Prabhupada left the planet. Horrible things. He had so many parts of his body was broken. But they didn't give him any anesthetic. They performed surgery on him without any anesthetic. He was horribly screaming. Blood was flying everywhere. The next day, he didn't remember anything. He didn't remember the surgery. He didn't remember the agony. He just blocked everything out. Because it was just too horrible for the mind to take. So one has to, not that everybody, that's why we don't remember Krishna's mercy. But when a person is prepared by cultivation of knowledge, Manu says, they will be able to remember everything. Not just one or two lives, but every lifetime. For however billions they may be, they will remember it all. And this will have such a horrifying effect that they will not want to maintain material contact. Which is the next point. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. So this knowledge, which is contained in the Bhagavad Gita, and as what Kapila Dev is explaining, this knowledge based upon self-realization and renunciation and knowledge, this causes a person to become indifferent to material life, as explained, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon them. And that will, the influence, of course, will be dependent. This effect will become dependent upon the level of realization of the person. The person doesn't even have to be that realized. The person may not even be realized at all. I remember one time I was speaking to my landlady. She was almost 80 years of age, a former model, former very beautiful lady. But now she was very sickly. But she was a pious lady. She was sickly. She had so many diseases. And she was feeling very upset because her former beauty is now totally deteriorated. She was losing battle trying to maintain her attractiveness. So I was one time speaking to her, just explaining to her, you're not your body. You're the soul. You're meant to serve Krishna. So just after speaking for 15 minutes or half an hour, she was so thankful. She felt such relief knowing I'm not my body. I'm not this thing which is rotting. From being very beautiful to becoming very ugly, rotting, going blind, so much pains in her body. Just the knowledge of this gave her so much relief. Or, in my own personal experience, recently I had a very severe car accident, just very close by. 12 broken bones, bleeding everywhere. I went on the operating table. They also did not give me anesthetic because they thought I had fractured skull. So the doctors were doing very many painful things to me. But I was, not that I'm self-realized, but I was preaching to them. I was preaching to the doctor. And you're not your body. This is the result of having a material body. Not for his benefit, for my benefit. Otherwise, how I could tolerate it. I can't even describe the agonies. For his benefit, and he was telling me to shut up. I wouldn't shut up. Because it was the only way I could tolerate it. And I was, to the point, I was cracking jokes with the doctor. He kept telling me that I just could not stop. Because if I stopped, all I could meditate is on my body. And so by speaking loud enough, I could overwhelm my mind, which was just focusing on the pain, the shock. So at 1 second, everything was okay. The next second, I'm laying in the side of the road, covered in blood, in pain that I can't even describe to you. I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. And I was blinded by my own blood. And in that situation, I had to chant. So it's not going to be easy. We have to practice. But the point being is that by preaching to this doctor, by preaching to the doctor, I was preaching to myself, and I was able to tolerate a extremely terrible experience. And not just then, I was preaching to all the doctors, all the nurses, everybody, for weeks, because the pain only subsided after about 8 weeks. The body can generate so much pain that death looks like your friend. So Kapila Dev, so by this knowledge, then it begins to act, we were able to become indifferent, and the influence is less powerful on us. Later, in the three chapters later, in the 28th chapter, Kapila Dev explains the position of very advanced devotee. In 28th chapter, verses 37 and 38, and also as explained in the 11th canto, he explains about an actual Jiva Mukta. He says here, because he has achieved his realignment, a perfectly realized soul has no conception of how the material body is moving or acting, just as an intoxicated person cannot understand whether or not he has clothing on his body. So, I don't know if you've seen in India, maybe if you have, but in the West often we'll see, like when Srila Prabhupada was living first in New York, he was living in the Bowery, which is just full of alcoholics. Sometimes he'd find them just like laying in front of them, and they become so intoxicated with alcohol that their clothing is half off, half on. They're so intoxicated, they're not even sure if they have clothing or not. But in such a advanced state of devotional consciousness, the living entity is not aware of whether or not he is wearing a body. He doesn't even know if he's got a body, so he will not be disturbed, he will not be upset. As is explained in the 6th chapter, 6:23, that in the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. So this is the same thing that Kapila Dev is saying here. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, he never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks that there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So, Krishna is explaining that one, by understanding oneself, by seeing one's own self, and also that's only possible if you can see Krishna, because when the sun rises, you see both the sun and yourself, then you gain true bliss. And you will never you never think there's anything higher than this, the highest gain, and you're never disturbed even in the greatest difficulty. Because that implies that there are going to be difficulties. There are going to be many difficulties. So many difficulties. As Bhaktisiddhanta said, as soon as one treads the path of devotional service, the path is strewn with thorns. There will be many difficulties. Don't think that simply because you're a devotee, nothing bad will happen to you. The prime example is the five sons of the Pandavas. Right? They were cousins of Lord Krishna. When the Pandavas were in the forest, the five sons were under the care of Subhadra. Their Dhanu Guru guru was Pradyumna, and Krishna is always there with them. But they were murdered in their sleep. Just because you're a devotee doesn't mean bad things. So many bad things, so many difficulties. But the devotee is not disturbed. Why? Because this karma, only the five subjects of the Gita includes karma. Other four subjects are eternal, karma is not eternal. So karma only affects the material body, the gross and subtle material body. So if you become detached from that by seeing who you really are, then you're not going to suffer. The subtle and gross body will suffer if that is a karma. But because you have detached yourself by seeing who you really are and identifying yourself with your true ego, which is that I am the servant of Krishna, Nityara Krishna Das, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, then I don't identify with the gross and subtle body. Then whatever happens to that body does not concern us, which is explained in the next verse, in the 28th chapter, 38. Kapila says, the body of such a liberated yogi, the yogi who not even aware of whether or not he's wearing a body, and along with the senses, is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it functions until its destined activities are finished. The liberated devotee, being awake to his constitutional position, and thus situated in samadhi, the highest perfectional stage of yoga, does not accept the byproducts of the body as his own. Thus he considers his bodily activities to be like the activities of a body in a dream. So here, Kapila says that such a yogi, who is not even aware of whether or not he's wearing a body, what happens? It's like he fell asleep at the wheel. The body is called yantra. Maya, yantra, what's it called? Anyway, that person, the body is like a chair, it's like a vehicle. So there's two passengers in that vehicle, the Atma and the Paramatma. So in this case, because he's not aware of wearing or not, whether or not he's wearing a body, it's like the driver fell asleep at the wheel. He's not looking out the windshield anymore. He fell asleep at the wheel. This is a very dangerous thing. So Krishna grabs the steering wheel. Now the body is functioning because Krishna, he is taking charge of the body, the gross and subtle body, all the senses. That yogi, he's not even aware of whether he has one. He's like a dream. For him, this bodily life is like a dream. So the dream, even sometimes in a dream, you are aware it's a dream. If the tiger is chasing you, don't get afraid. How many times you've died in your dreams, after a while, it doesn't frighten you anymore. So you realize it's a dream. You continue. And then, as Prabhu was thinking about the Uddhava Gita yesterday, when Uddhava Gita, Krishna explains, why do we dream? Why do we dream? Is there nothing else to do? Just create a dream is because he has extra time on his hands? No. Everything Krishna does has got a purpose. So the reason we dream, he explains, is that a wise person will think, that seems so real. When he awakens, he thinks, that seems so real. This also seems so real. This Jagrati also seems real, but it's not. It's like that Swapna. It's just a dream. A thoughtful person would think that. Dreams, as explained in the Vedanta, have many purposes. They're real. Dreams are real. They're not unreal. But they are not they are created by Krishna, but they are not a shared reality. I don't share your dream. I don't share your dream. Nobody shares your dream. You have your own dream that's just for you. And there's so many things about dreams explained there. So explains here that even though the yogi is entranced, like an intoxicated person, unaware whether or not he's got a body, and Krishna's hanging onto the steering wheel in charge of everything, but the body continues. Body continues until the destined activities of that body are completed. So Bhakti Yoga, Baladevi Vibhushan explains that Bhakti Yoga is strong enough to destroy all karma. But
destroy corrupt karma. Karma is divided into two types. Sanchipta karma, which is the sum total of all past karma, and kriyamana karma, which is newly created karma. Everything is not from the past. Sometimes as an astrologer, I get people come to me, oh, I met this girl, she is my soulmate from a previous life, that they're thinking like this. Oh, it's always from some previous life. But this concept means that you never have something, you know, that means why not in the last life she was a soulmate from a previous life. You know, it creates the idea that nothing ever happened for the first time. The fallacy of the infinite regress. So no, things do happen for the first time. Newly created karma. And the other category is sanchitta karma. All sum total past karma, which are divided into two subcategories. Arabdha karma and prarabdha karma. Corrupta karma is that if you go to the Jamuna and you take a glass, you pour out a glass of water, that could be equivalent to the corrupta karma. Whereas the rest of the Jamuna is the arabdha karma. The corrupta karma has been put into action. It's been put into action. Whereas the arabdha karma is waiting in potential. So it describes in the Shastra, like in the Gita, that all karmas are destroyed. Just as wood is turned into ashes by the action of fire, it means that it's the arabdha karma which is destroyed by the power of bhakti yoga, not the corrupta karma. Because you just look in the mirror and you will have proof that you have corrupta karma. Your body, it's there. If bhakti yoga destroyed your karma, and even then the first thing that happens is your body will fall off. At the time of initiation, the guru, initiation ceremony, all the karmas are passed up to Krishna. But if the karma would be destroyed, that means everybody in the yajna shala would be dead. Their just body would just fall off. Imagine trying to get somebody to get initiated. Who's next? Next batch, please. Nobody would step into the yajna shala. Everybody dies. So, Baladeva Vibhushan explains that Krishna is very intelligent. That bhakti yoga is powerful enough to destroy prarabdha karma, but it doesn't, because no one would be left to teach the Brahma Vidya. Because as soon as they achieve Brahma Vidya, they would die. Not a very practical thing. But the influence is less. They're not feeling it because they don't even realize they have a body. And the prarabdha karma, with however long it may take many lives, not just one life. Could take 10,000 lives. Well, what is 10,000 lives to somebody who's not even sure if he's got a body or not? You may see the body. It's like if you go to the Brahmachari ashram after breakfast. So many of the Brahmacharis might be sleeping, you know. After eating, come sleeping. If the stomach is full, the brain is empty. So you may see the Brahmachari laying there, but he is some other place, he's dreaming. He's in some other place. So Jivan Mukta, he is not even. You only see the external form. We see Srila Prabhupada, we only saw his external form. We could not see what he was doing internally. Or somebody like Bhakti Siddhanta, we only can understand tiny, tiny portion of their real existence. Only what we see externally, not internally. So they are not experiencing what we're experiencing. Baladeva Vibhushan explained that their corrupted karma is like burnt cloth. You burn some cloth, the ashes have the same form of the cloth. Or sometimes, I've experienced, you burn a newspaper, and as long as you don't touch the newspaper, you can still read it. Right? You had that experience? You can still read it. But as soon as you just give it one touch, it just powder. So their corrupted karma is like that. It's still, the form is there, but it's just like burnt cloth. It only appears that way. Or like a package of hing. Right? Once you empty out the hing, there's no more hing in the package, but if you smell it, it still has a smell of hing, though there's no hing there. So this is there. So even, and this type of activity, that karma is there too, is given to the devotee by Krishna, because Krishna is a cowherd boy. Right? And what do cowherd boys carry?
they carry sticks. So the devotee, he's so much in bliss, he maybe thinks the material world could be a nice place, so Krishna gives a hit here and to keep the cow from going off the path, straightforward. So this kind of karma can be like that also. It's not by any sinful reaction, but like Krishna making sure that the devotee doesn't get lost in his ecstasies. Looking at the material world is also a nice place. It's to remind him that it is a perfectly imperfect place. So, our duties, we are members of the Guru Parampara, all of us. So our duty is to give this knowledge. First of all, our duty is first to practice it ourselves. By the knowledge, practice and enunciation, then we will achieve these characteristics, as explained by Kapila. Then we can give it to other persons. And Srila Prabhupada explained that this is the highest welfare work for society at large. The highest welfare. So we should not be diverted in any ways from our mission. Unfortunately, there are other groups who claim to be spiritual organizations, but they are just engaged in mundane philanthropy. So they're serving. They open up hospitals, all kinds of mundane relief work, schools, feeding the poor, etc. So this is not our mission. It is a material disease. It is a disease. So in medicine, there's two principles. First of all, there's three principles. First, you diagnose what is the disease. So it's material disease. Then there's the principle of symptomatic relief. You relieve the symptoms and you cure the disease. But if you simply relieve the symptoms without curing the disease, you've accomplished nothing. Because then the symptom is simply masked and the patient dies. Nothing accomplished. We have to cure the disease. Not material disease. The cure is jnana vairagya nija bhakti yoga. To practice this with devotional service. Now, unfortunately, even in ISKCON, this type of mentality, specifically, you know, this idea of food distribution, food for life, which has really been pushed, especially by the Vedics, this is not our mission. This has become highly controversial, and we see the devotees are very critical of this. This whole concept of food for life began much, much after the Prabhupada left. It started in the late 80s, early 90s, because there were some major scandals which took place, specifically in Vrindavan. I won't go into all the sordid details, but there were many messy things happening which created very bad public relations problem. So, leaving devotees in charge of the public relations, which is now called Islamic communication, they didn't consult Kapila Devi, they didn't consult Shastri Gachar, they consulted Karmi public relations experts, what we should do to improve our public image. So they said, Do this food distribution. That's how it became injected into this stuff. This is how the real solution was, that our leaders should be following these principles and this kind of public relations disaster wouldn't happen. That is the real solution. We should follow, we should take our own medicine. Physician, heal thyself. Because of not following our own principles, then we had this disaster. So anyway, they said, do this material problem. This problem, since this material solution has become, it's becoming bigger and bigger, and we see that even some, it's becoming very much like mundane philanthropy. Because Prabhupada's idea of food distribution was not like this. Prabhupada, his idea says, nobody within 10 miles of the temple should go hungry. Then we go to them, they come to the temple, they have darshan, your kirtan, your pravachan, paper shot. Right, that's what Prabhupada meant by that. how do we know it's even, they don't even call it prasad, they call it food. How do we know it's even prasadam? We don't know. Prasadam is, you know, it's not Krishna got a garbage can. You just stick something in front of him and he takes it. He's not obligated. He's not obligated. Prabhupada gave one very severe chastisement in 1976 in Hyderabad that I'm glad I wasn't there. But I heard it on the tape, and Hari Shari told me that the tape, smoke was coming from the tape. Prabhupada was so furious that it was mass prasadam distribution. So Prabhupada seldom asked, but this time he asked, I want a sample of what's being distributed. So he told Hari Shari to go out and get some prasad sample. So Hari Shari sees these people standing in line, and some glob of something was poured on their plate. They looked at it and they threw it on the ground. And then some starving dog came. The dog smelled it and walked away. Imagine how starving the dogs are in India. And he walks away from this. And then Parashar went into the kitchen, he tells me. And then he sees the man who in the morning was the bungee had been engaged as the cook. And he was cooking. And he was scooping off whatever was good, bringing to his family. So when Hari Shri told all of this to Prabhupada, Prabhupada was displaying his thunderbolt mood, extremely angry, calling everybody in. That prasadam, he explained, prasadam should be so good, that even if you are filled up to your neck, when you see it, you want to take some more. Not that a dog will reject it. It should be good enough for a king. Not just because we're distributing to masses, it's, you know, it's being offered to Krishna first. That's being offered to Krishna. Then the complaint was made. Well, Srila Prabhupada, we don't have any money. The Prabhupada said, I will give it to you out of my own pocket. It should be fit for a king. Prasadam. So we don't know if it's prasadam or not, it's just food. And so this you know, it comes into sentimentality. Bhakti Siddhanta, our Param Guru Maharaj, he also, his example is to be followed. He was, as it says in the second chapter, 11th verse of Bhagavad Gita, that those who are wise lament neither for the living or the dead. So one time in the time of Bhakti Siddhanta, I think it was in the late 20s or early 30s, there was a huge flood in Bengal. Massive flood. Disastrous. Thousands of villages were flooded. Many people, thousands, tens of thousands were killed. Millions were starving. Millions were starving to death. So Bhakti Siddhanta, the Gaudiya Mutt, had to preach for collecting money for food relief, ostensibly. When all the money was collected, Bhakti Siddhanta did not spend one paisa on food relief. He spent all the money for creating dioramas, preaching, creating huge outcry, huge public outcry, to the extent that Mahatma Gandhi, Subhas Chandra Bose Netaji, and Annie Besant, they all came to Calcutta. They sat in front of the Gaudiya Mutt and protested for 3 days that he had misappropriated the money, they said. He did not come out. He didn't come out. After 3 days, he came out and said, oh, you're so concerned about these people who are starving? Why are you not concerned about the people drowning in the Bhavasagara? Who are drowning in material life? You're not concerned about them? You're just simply blowing on a boil. You're not solving any problems. The real problem, the real solution is to give this knowledge so the people do not have to take birth again. Then everything is solved. This disease, material disease, is the cause of all problems, all wars, everything is the cause of our forgetfulness of Krishna and our identification with material body. That is the real disease. The cause is all problems are stemming from this. So they're simply blowing on a boil. We don't want to blow on a boil, we want to inject this knowledge of Krishna consciousness and save people from this terrible material world. So So some people might think, well, the devotees should become callous. No, not that we're callous, but it's not our mission. Our mission is specifically delineated by the Guru Parampara to give this knowledge. There are so many other institutions doing that. Who is doing this? Only we're doing. Only the Guru Parampara is our mission. It's not that, as Jasho Matinanda was saying one time, that you know, if a devotee, he sees some little old lady having difficulty crossing the street, certainly he'll help her. But it's not that he goes and searches for every little old lady in the world to help her to cross the street. That's not his mission. He's there, he'll help her. He's compassionate. But doesn't make it his life's mission to search out all old ladies so they can cross, he can be there to help them cross the street. Or every year there's this man-made flood in Mayapur. Right? So we go out to all the villages. We distribute food, we distribute prasadam to them. And they're our neighbors. Not only are they our neighbors, they're our devotees. They are the congregation of Radha Madhava. They are the ones who are filling up the temple every morning. Devotees of Radha, they come from all the surrounding villages. So we go to them, we try to help them. We give them food, we give them prasadam. So the devotee is compassionate. But we have to remember, always keep in front of us the real goal. We fail that, then we have failed the Guru Parampara. Then we become a weak link. Yoga nashta parantapa. That's how the Guru Parampara becomes broken. When the link in the chain becomes weak. So that's all of us. We are all links in that chain. So, I think I've gone a little bit too long. Anybody has any comments or questions?
It's not a pleasant experience. So you need all the help that you can get.
answer to this. That's it.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai.